about anything else.
We don't want to know.
We're dedicated, yes,
to our favorite shows.
All my circuits.
Everybody loves Hypnoto.
Scary Dog.
Larson and Blurzball.
Futurama.
Good evening. You are listening to a Rattlegem Broadcasting premiere podcast, TV Party Tonight. I'm your host, the Mandated Reporter, and frankly, I'm mortified, Mr. Mark Rattledge. And tonight, our favorite show is the wonderful world of Mickey Mouse. Yes, it's the House of Mouse. We're back again. This particular show is a show that was produced by Disney Television Animation for Disney Plus. It is a continuation and revival of the, now get this, Emmy Award-winning Mickey Mouse TV series that uses the same style and has many of the same cast and crew, with the exception of the late Lucy Taylor as Minnie Mouse, who was replaced by Caitlin Robrock. The series was first announced on September 14th, 2020, and premiered on November 18th, 2020, to coincide with Mickey's 92nd birthday. This first bit ran for 5 weeks. There were two shorts released each day, starting November 18th, then the 27th, then the 4th, then the 11th, and then wrapping up on December 18th, for a total of 10 8-minute shorts. This podcast is going to be longer than the total running time of this entire show, but that's all right. And speaking of the House of Mouse, the Queen of Animation, ladies and gentlemen, back from her roaring tour of Animaniacs and Looney Tunes, and here to knock your socks off, talking about the wonderful world of Mickey Mouse, from Honeysuckle Rose Creations, Alexis Haina. How do you do, madam?
Who's the leader of the club that's made for you and me?
M-I-C.
Keep K-E-Y. Going.
K-E-Y. Handle you as he, Mickey Mouse, go fuck yourself. Oh, Mickey Mouse. Oh, sorry.
What did you say?
Mickey Mouse, go fuck yourself. Mickey Mouse. It's Donald angrily yelling at Mickey Mouse.
Okay, that was definitely not where I was going with this.
Believe it or not, that was not like an impromptu bit. I for whatever reason, whenever I think about the Mickey Mouse Club theme song and they go to the Donald Duck part, I always imagine Donald Duck like giving the finger or whatever, like, just leave me alone.
So much for keeping our show children friendly.
My children listen to it all the time.
Yeah, I know, and we're already calling Child Developmental Services.
Developmental? Child Protective. Protective.
Protective? Okay.
All right, so in all seriousness, this, so Mickey Mouse, right, the original iteration of this ran from 2013 to 2018, and then there were two specials in 2016, and then this one on Disney Plus, one of the many of the original Disney Plus shows that they were rolling out to get you to buy the damn thing. So these all premiered on the Disney Channel, and they ran for between 18 to 20 shorts apiece. How familiar are you with the first iteration of this version of the Mickey Mouse cartoons?
The ones that premiered on YouTube as well as the Disney Channel? I have actually watched those quite a bit. I love the animation, the style. That's kind of a nice callback to both earlier cartoons and I would say the comic books as well. I think they're kind of taking a page out of what they did with the DuckTales reboot. It gives it a really unique style. It's a lot of fun. I love the, we were talking about this earlier, they did a lot of international shorts where they were in other places and they were speaking different languages. I thought that was very clever. And not to mention very, I would say, educational for kids. And yeah, I love just putting the shorts on in the background while I'm working at home, and they're on Disney Plus now, and they're really enjoyable.
So, I've seen some of these. My kids watch them. Apparently, my son watched a whole bunch of these, because when I told him we were watching The Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse, he was like, "I've seen them already." I'm like, "There's no possible way," and he was like, "Oh, wait, there's new ones. That's what you're talking about." And I'm like, "Yes." he was, oh, hot dog, I love these things. And he's been trying to pitch to me that I should go back and watch these previous five seasons. He loves the style of animation. When I first saw it, I don't know. I think this might be my age showing, but, you know, we just watched, like, some of the old Mickey Mouse Christmas cartoons around the holiday, not just Mickey's Christmas Carol, but, like, The House of Mouse and Once Upon a Christmas, I think they're called. And mm-hmm. these are the computer-generated ones, animated ones. And I think, like, one of them, Mickey works on a Christmas tree a lot, and it's, like, you know, their version of the Gift of the Magi. And it's all Mickey looking in his, like, traditional cartoon look, and Minnie looking in, you know, the way that she normally looks. And I kind of prefer that. I like Mickey with, you know, with the broad, round face and ears and everything, and, you know, has that sort of 1930s mentality to him. You know, these kind of, you know, I was thinking back to our Animaniacs show and Looney Tunes especially, where they try to give the classic cartoons a facelift and a more contemporary feel, and it doesn't feel like the cartoons that I grew up with, which they're not. And I was more accepting of it with Looney Tunes. I think thinking back to when we talked about that show, other than the gross bubblegum one, you know, I was like, okay, I get what they're doing here, and I kind of like most of it. Here, I was, and I don't want people to think like, oh, he's going to bash all over this thing. I actually ended up really liking the shorts that I saw. In fact, I liked them better than Looney Tunes, to be honest with you. But going into it is what I'm trying to say. I don't like this artistic style, and going into it, I had a hard time accepting the way, you know, this update to the Mickey Mouse character.
I didn't mind so much the update to the character, mostly because I felt that this was the first time in ages they really gave Mickey character. Mickey Mouse, in so many iterations, is the bland good guy. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, he is the good-hearted everyman. He is meant for kids to identify with. Kids are supposed to want to be like Mickey Mouse. Mm-hmm. But often in the earlier shorts, things didn't really happen that much to Mickey. The slapstick and everything happened more to Goofy and Donald.
Or Pluto,
yeah, because they could get a lot more physical and they could get angrier. I mean, yeah, nothing's better than watching Donald just completely lose his freaking mind.
Well, I was thinking about, like, a Mickey, a really good example of what you're talking about is another Christmas cartoon, one that gets played, especially around my house, around Christmas time. And it's a Chip and Dale cartoon, but it has Mickey and Pluto in it. And Mickey is not the star of this cartoon.
Pluto's Christmas tree. That's a classic.
Right. And so the bit here is that they went out and chopped down a tree. And, of course, it's like every Bugs Bunny set up. You know, they happen to pick the one goddamn tree in the forest that had Chip and Dale in it. And so he's dressing the Christmas tree, and Chip and Dale are messing with the Christmas tree. And, of course, everything that they do, Pluto sees. And he tries to get Mickey to see it. And Mickey completely misinterprets Pluto's intentions or misses what Pluto's trying to point out. And it's the same gag 2 and 3 and 4 times until finally Mickey is pulled into the Christmas tree with Pluto and Chip and Dale. And the whole thing is ruined. And he says, "You dumb mutt." And then he realizes there's chipmunks in the tree and goes... It goes, "Pluto, there's chipmunks." And Pluto's like, "You motherfucker."
Yeah, Pluto does the ultimate face palm. Like, are you kidding me?
That was great. But that's a really good example of what you're saying about how Mickey is sort of orbiting the action. The action happens to Pluto or Donald or Goofy. There's usually an antagonist in like Chip and Dale or Pete or somebody.
Exactly, but these new ones, Mickey is given a lot more character development. You see him get mad, you see him get frustrated, you see him get angry. He gets a little bit more of the brunt of the slapstick, and I enjoyed it. Again, I don't think there's anything wrong with the earlier shorts where Mickey was the good-hearted everyman, but I like these that are actually really having him take more of a front and center stage to his own cartoons.
Yeah, I would tell you, up until the very end, which we're going to talk at length about, because, oh boy. But Donald is, and I used to watch, I don't know if you remember this, I mean, they were 7 years apart, so you might not have been watching or alive when this was a thing, but on the Disney Channel, there used to be a syndicated collection of Donald Duck shorts called Donald Duck Presents. Do you remember that?
Can't say I do. I probably did see it, but it's not ringing a bell.
Okay. Donald Duck Presents. Na, 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 na. Donald Duck Presents. Da, 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 da. Anyway.
So that one you start singing, but when I try to cue you for the Mickey Mouse Club theme, all of a sudden you just can't even get it right.
I got it right as far as I'm concerned. So
we should have rehearsed.
So I was thinking about, like, you know, Donald has a lot between Donald and Donald's nephews, Donald by himself. There's a shit ton of Donald Duck out there. And there's a shit ton of Goofy. Like, Goofy is, you know, has those series of how-to cartoons that are classics, and those are the ones everyone remembers and everyone loves. Even, yeah, like, the more modern ones, like, how to hook up your entertainment center.
Oh, I love that recent one. That was I hate to say it. I'm the moron that when the box shows up and you see the instructions, I'm the idiot that pauses it every time because that thing is covered in jokes. And I'm just going nuts looking for all of them. But, yeah, Goofy had that whole series of the Everyman. I got to ask, what is actually your all-time favorite Everyman Goofy cartoon? Do you know?
Oh, gosh. I like him playing football. I think that one's funny. I need to look at a list of them because I know there's a whole bunch in there that are really hysterical. Like, I think about the one of him playing baseball. The one playing football is really funny. The hockey ones. The hockey one, the explanation from the narrator is what cracks me up. Because they do that, like, that pullback wide shot of the hockey rink, and they're trying to explain to you how hockey works. It's just dots all over the place. It's great.
See, my favorite is the how to ski, or the art of skiing.
That's a good one.
It's that, actually, a lot of people credit that one because that gives us the absolute best recording of the iconic Goofy yell when he's going down the ski jump.
There's one of him dancing, isn't there?
Yes! Oh, I love the How to Dance. That's a great one.
Yeah.
Horribly richly insensitive by current standards, but still great.
There's another series of ones that he's done. The Mr. Wheeler stuff. We've talked about that in the past. Like, I don't remember what made me bring it up, but there's an entire series of Goofy Mr. Wheeler, which are hilarious.
I do love the pogo stick one. That's a great one. Not to mention really iconic of wartime. So I've got a real thing for cartoons that you were clearly made with kind of a message of wartime era and can only be seen as like a bit of a mild propaganda in a way. So I love watching the shorts about rationing and, you know, donating your scrap metal and things like that.
So
it's fun, fascinating.
So the point that Alexis and I are sort of dancing around, coming back to it, is how Goofy and Donald and Pluto and even Chippendale have gotten so much over the years. And they are relegated to background characters in this show, which makes sense. It's the Mickey Mouse show. We get it. So your point is well taken that Mickey Mouse has made a prominent figure in his own goddamn show. And they give him all the personality. They give him a lot of the jokes. They make him the protagonist in these 8-minute shorts, and he's against Pete in some. He's, they bring in some new characters for him to, you know, to mess with. These more resemble like Bugs Bunny Looney Tunes shorts than the classic Mickey Mouse.
And maybe that's the reason why I love it so much. There's an old saying that classic Warner Brothers or classic Walt Disney cartoons were like classical music. Classic Warner Brothers cartoons were more like jazz. This is the first time that you really feel, like you said, Mickey Mouse and Walt Disney stepping out of their comfort zone and stepping into the shoes of another animation style. But frankly, I enjoy it. And maybe that's my bias because I love this style from Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera and Tom and Jerry, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. I liked this. I liked it, I think, more than Looney Tunes. I definitely laughed out loud more. There was not a single one of these that I had to get up and walk away or shut my eyes because it was gross. So automatically, this was better than the Looney Tunes shorts. I just had that bias going into it because I really do love and appreciate, as you described, the kind of Mickey Mouse that you can project yourself on. That there's so little innocence in the world of television and movies. Mickey Mouse was one of those things that I kind of hung on to. And he's not even my favorite character. My favorite characters are the Duck family. Scrooge, Victor Von Drake, Ludwig Von Drake, sorry.
Professor Von Drake is actually my all-time favorite Disney character.
You know, Donald. So, you know, I am a huge fan of the middle-aged and elderly ducks. But, you know...
Old man of the mountains.
Yep, and I don't want them painted. but I... And we'll move on from this. I just... Mickey was one of those things I felt was, like, untouchable, I think. Like, oh, leave Mickey alone, his innocence. And nope, Mickey is right. Mickey's throwing pies and, you know, and doing Marx Brothers routines. And it's like, ah, Mickey... This is you're above this sort of thing, Mickey. You're cartoon Jesus, for Christ's sake. All right, moving on. So November 18th, we have a pair of shorts here. We have Cheese Wranglers first, and this actually they previewed before the series came out, and it reads: Minnie Mouse, the proprietor of Big Thunder Valley, hires Mickey Mouse, the best cheese wrangler in the West, to ride every cheese wheel to town with her ranch hands, Donald and Goofy, assisting him. But they need to keep the cheese safe from the infamous cheese wrestler, Peg Leg Pete. And Humphrey the Bear makes a brief cameo in this. I laughed pretty hard at this. They came storming out of the gate with a really funny one. First of all, the concept of like cheese wheels acting as cows, cattle, yeah, was pretty hilarious to me.
Not to mention, it lets you have a lot of fun, because there is no easier humor base than cheese puns.
yeah, this one cracked me up. A lot of the bits with the cheese, the rolling cheese wheels acting as cattle, made me laugh out loud. My kids got a big kick out of it. This one was a hit for me. Do you have any other thoughts on it?
I love the recurring gag that every time someone says the code, their voice deepens, and they get all really close, like a freaking John Wayne camera, just how serious it is. And even Donald Duck is like, tell me about the code. I mean, that's just great humor.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. The second short, I was dying at this. This made me like tear up with laughter. This was The House of Tomorrow, and this actually guest starred Alan Tudyk as the house. At the Hall of Science, Mickey, Donald, and Goofy sneak into Professor Ludwig von Drake's House of Tomorrow, a futuristic house with an artificial intelligence tending to meet their every need, which turns out not to be the dream they were envisioning. This episode is a tribute to the original Tomorrowland attraction at Disneyland, the Monsanto House of the Future.
They even have both Mickey and the house sing the classic Sherman Brothers song, There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow.
I laughed at that hard. Like, I caught that, and that was like a huge guffaw for me, where I was laughing pretty loudly. I love this episode. I thought this was great. You know, I was telling my wife about it. Like, this made me laugh so hard. Because the setup essentially is that, first, they walk past the house, and Ludwig von Drake tells them, hey, it's not even ready yet, don't go in there. And Mickey's like, but artificial intelligence, like, they wrote into his character that Mickey loves technology, so he has to check this house out, and of course, Donald and Goofy follow him. And so, there's the three of them...
There's also a bit of a continuation from those earlier Mickey Mouse shorts that we were talking about, because in at least three separate shorts that I can count, whenever they visit Professor Von Drake, something goes wrong for Donald. So So when they're Mickey's like, let's go in. Donald's like, I don't get along well with technology, and it's like, yeah, we know.
So they kind of separate the three of them. Mickey goes to one area, and at first it starts out really well. The house is taking good care of him. It's getting him to relax. I think the first big belly laugh I had was he pulls a book out.
It's Bambi.
Yeah. And the house, like, just, it's, and the house, like, they kill Bambi's mother. I don't know if you ever watched The Big Bang Theory, but there's an episode where Sheldon ruins Harry Potter for Leonard. And, you know, and it sparks a huge fight between them, which had been brewing for a while. But the whole thing started off with, you know, him spoiling the book. And it was one of those moments, and that's part of the reason why I laugh so hard.
Big Bang Theory is actually a point of contention with me and my mother. See, she loved that show. I watched a bit of it. I did think that it was genuinely funny. However, every time I tried to tell my mother about my life in the Comic-Con circuit, she put her hands up and said, we don't care. We don't know anything about that kind of stuff. You're talking about, you know, something that's going in one ear out the other. And I would just stare at her going, how can you watch Big Bang Theory and be such a fan of it and not pick up any of the geek culture references that it says and that I'm sharing? And she would just be like, I don't know. But she never wanted to listen to me talk about meeting voice actors or, you know, trends in animation or anything, or, you know, the new comic books or anything. And I'm like, you watch Big Bang Theory. You should be at least remotely interested in what I'm talking about.
Okay. So, yeah, when the house tries to spoil the book for, or does in fact spoil the book for Mickey Mouse and the face that he makes, and it gets, goes on like that. Like, everything, like, anything Mickey tries to do for himself, the house then does to, you know, and it becomes this, and this, I guess, becomes like a reoccurring theme with the series, where the house turns into like a horror monster, like, you know, and Mickey's trapped and he can't get out, and it's like, what the hell? Refresh my memory. What is happening to Donald? I remember at one point he's in a dark part of the house, but I can't remember why.
Since the house can predict what each person needs, it says that Donald obviously needs to relax.
Right.
Because that is the reoccurring joke with Donald, is that, you know, sweet Jesus, somebody get this man a tranquilizer and a stiff alcoholic drink. And at first it's working, but when things start to get a little rough, Donald starts to get nervous, and the house goes, you need to relax more. And at one point it gives him a very unappreciated shiatsu massage.
Right,
just
okay.
Back.
And then Goofy, you know, it's like, tell me what you want, and, you know, anything you want. And of course, Goofy can't make up his mind. And so... he's at a standstill with the house because he can't come up with anything because there's too many choices. And this becomes a gag later on to get him out of the situation. So both Donald and Mickey are in hell. and the house has them trapped and it won't let them out. And finally, the gag with Goofy is what saves them, because Mickey says, all right, Goofy, tell them all the things you want. And it overloads the house's circuits and it blows up.
So, and then even Ludwig von Drake is none the wiser.
I think he walks past the house after they've run for their lives and sees that it's on fire.
Yeah, and he says, I'll deal with it tomorrow. But
yeah, da-da-da-da-da. November 27th, we have Hard to Swallow. Mickey tries to get Pluto to eat his fleas. Oh, this one. Which Pluto finds disgusting. The situation becomes dire when an army of fleas targets Pluto. And this is where Fifi makes her first appearance in the series. So, yeah. This is a back and forth between Mickey and Pluto where he's trying to get him to take the pill. And it's the old thing you do with the dog when you try to hide the pill in the food. At every turn, Pluto is confounding Mickey. And he won't take the pill. And they even go over to Minnie's house. And Minnie has successfully gotten the dog to take her pill. So they try it with Pluto. And Pluto actually hips Fifi to the jive. And now Fifi won't take the pill, and fleas overwhelm poor Minnie's apartment. And it's, you've seen this gag in cartoons before. It's normally done with roaches. Or ants, one of the two. In this particular case, it was done with fleas, but basically, it's also been done with bees. So any small insect creature, morphs into this large monster creature and can form different... It, like Green Lantern, it can form physical objects and hit you with them and stuff like that. Go ahead.
I was like, I think I've actually seen this done before where it was a kid needs to take his medicine and they won't, so all of a sudden the germs are coming and you could just see like what looks like a carpet and it's just tons of germs, you know.
So it gets down to where the fleas have left Minnie. And they now they're now attacking Mickey Mouse, and it's dire. And if Pluto doesn't take this pill, they're all going to die, basically. And Pluto finally takes the pill. I'm laughing now. It was mildly amusing at the time, but there was and again, I want to come back to this, but they definitely wrote some horror elements into this like kiddie television show.
Yeah, the fleas take the form of a freaking oven. And Pluto is put on a platter and being led into... It's like, you've ever seen Pluto's Judgment Day, the short where he is sent to hell?
Yes.
I'm sitting there going, wow, okay, apparently someone's a fan of that short.
that's the bit with the angel and the devil on his shoulder.
Yeah, and them sentencing him basically to burn in one of those... It's like that thing from Silent Hill where they put you in the chair that has no... seat under it, and then they're like holding you over the fire,
right? And yeah, this is because he kept attacking the cat,
yeah,
if I remember correctly. Yeah, it was one of those deals. I think there's an iteration of the similar thing in a Tom and Jerry cartoon, if I remember correctly.
I have to say though, this did make me laugh, because if anyone who has owned a dog or just a pet in general and has had trouble getting them to take their pills. For the record, the inventor of those little edible pill pockets, God bless you for making our lives so much easier. But, oh man, the times that I had trying to get my dog, my old Cocker Spaniels, Pelly and Chauncey, my old Golden Retriever, Dungamel, Shepherd, Barney, trying to get them to take their pill. You throw the pill in their mouth and you clamp it shut and you start rubbing their throat trying to get them to swallow, and somehow they rolled it up in their tongue, and when you think they're finally done, they go bleh, and they spit the damn thing out.
The next one.
Sorry, I got on a little tirade there. I have had nightmares.
No, it's fine. Feel free to go on as many tangents as you want, but this next one, boy, you weren't kidding when they said they really wrote a lot of character into Mickey. The problem is they wrote Mickey as a psycho. Between this, like, he's just a lunatic throughout the most of these, and this is a really good example of that. This one's called School of Fish, and this one, Mickey sends his goldfish Gubbles to school, but becomes so concerned for his well-being that he begins to follow him everywhere. So yeah, like, he said it's a goldfish, and my kids thought this was was funny, but like also the stupidest thing ever. Because, you know, little children will point out the obvious to the point where it can become grating. And so my son picked up that they're playing on the pun of a school of fish. Get it? Fish travel in schools, bunches.
Yep.
So they send the fish to school because it's a school of fish. Get it?
Side note, this is actually one of the things I absolutely love about these shorts. The teacher fish is the fish form Merlin takes in The Sword and the Stone. Yeah. And this is one of the things I love so much, is that even though the show focuses on Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy, and Daisy, the backgrounds are filled with so many characters and little cameos and nods to previous Disney portrayals, and I love that. I love that they're taking advantage of things.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I remember one short where Minnie thinks there's a thief, and she starts interrogating, and she interrogates the Beagle Boys and the Evil Queen from Snow White and the Phantom Blob or Blot, Blob, Blot, I can't remember. But again,
yeah, I actually didn't pick it up with this episode, but the next one, the disco one, I did.
Yeah, oh god, Yen Sid, but we'll get to that in a sec. I think kids are not going to relate to this one as much just because I don't think they're going to get the helicopter parrot joke.
I mean, my kids got it. You know, they understood the physicality of what was happening. I mean, my kids are both in school, And, you know, there is clearly... their mother teaches in the school that they currently attend in person. I have to make that distinction because COVID. Yes, we are not homeschooling our children. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But my wife, like can't follow them around the school. Despite the fact that she works there, my kids have very much understood that mommy can't come into the classroom unless she's working in there. And even if she is, she's not there really to interact with you. You can say hello, but as you would any teacher. But this isn't, you know, my wife is there to do a job. She's an ESE specialist. So she comes into the classroom to work with the ESE kids. These were kids who 20, 30, 40 years ago would be referred to as special ed, by the way, in case people don't know the lingo. My kids got basically what was happening, and they certainly understood that neither one of them are necessarily at an age yet where mom and dad are embarrassing, but they certainly appreciate their own individuality and the freedom such as it is when you're 7 and 10 years old. So when the goldfish is in class and he's raising his hand to answer a question, and then you pan to the right and there's Mickey crouched into a desk, and the fish is like, what the fuck, man? And this keeps happening. You know, Mickey turns up in the cafeteria, Mickey turns up in a locker, Mickey is everywhere. And he starts off as just hovering, but descends into talking baby talk with the fish and infantilizing him. Like at one point,
you get a scene where the fish sharpens his pencils to start writing, and Mickey is too terrified of him poking himself with the pencil, so he gives him a kid-friendly crayon.
The one that I was thinking about was in the cafeteria where he has him in the baby chair.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, all the other fish are laughing at him. They're like, yeah, that would suck. If my school were actually like that and mom were that kind of a psychopath, we would not enjoy it as much. Mickey's a psycho. He's a crazy person. The joke, thank God these are only eight minute shorts, because the joke got old after about 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
The conclusion of this is the conclusion of every version of this kind of story. Something comes, finally the fish snaps and tells Mickey to go fuck himself. So Mickey fucks off. And at some point, some big fish attacks the school, and the goldfish defends the school and becomes a hero. And Mickey's like, "Oh, I guess you can take care of yourself. Okay, see you at home."
But not before getting locked in the locker one last time.
Sure. What'd you think of this one?
Not bad. A little on the predictable side, mm-hmm. but still enjoyable. It's kind of funny because I didn't really. Thank God my parents weren't helicopter parents, but I didn't know anyone with crazy helicopter parents until I went to college.
Okay.
I had a roommate who shared an apartment with me. Her mother, crazy helicopter parent, made sure that everything in the apartment we shared, that everything we needed for the apartment, she insisted on picking out, and she made sure that she had final say on everything there. Like, oh my God.
December 4th, the two shorts are Keep on Rolling, and I love this one. Big fan. First of all, big fan of roller skating and disco, so woohoo! Mickey and his friend's disco night at the roller rink is crashed by Pegleg Pete and his gang of Disney villains. So yeah, you were talking about how they really made full use of the cadre of Disney characters from the movies and other cartoons and such. Part of Pete's gang is Ursula.
And voiced by Pat Carroll, Ursula's original voice actress from the 1989 film.
Oh, interesting. See, that's why I have you on the show for stuff like that. Yeah, I was really shocked to see Ursula as part of Pete's gang.
I'm just kind of shocked seeing Ursula walk around on her tentacles like they're legs. I'm sorry. Every time I've ever seen Ursula move in the movie or when she cameos in House of Mouse or something like that, she's basically just kind of slithering across the floor as you would expect an octopus on dry land to do. This time, she's using her tentacles as legs, and it looks so bizarre.
So the premise of this one is that they're a roller derby team, because who doesn't love roller derby? And they take over they bully Mickey Mouse and his gang, who are roller disco skating, complete with the disco the 70s disco outfits, which are fantastic.
In the disco outfit. So, fun little fact, if you do not know this, the sorcerer from The Sorcerer's Apprentice, the classic Fantasia bit, Disney officially named that sorcerer Yen Sid.
Oh, that's where they got that from.
Yeah. Yeah, get it? Get where Yen Sid comes from?
Now that you mention it.
Yeah, so I love that they had him as the DJ, and then when he pulls off the robe, he's wearing the yellow tank top, and I'm like, oh, dear God.
Yeah, my son and I couldn't figure out who that was, and I think he said he was... I think he was the one that guessed that it was the wizard from The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yep, it was Yen Sid.
Yeah, I thought it was... For some odd reason, and I guess because I saw Ursula, and this is where my brain went, I thought it was... What's-his-face, the King of Atlantis.
Triton,
yeah. I thought it was maybe like a skinny version of Triton at first, and then I was like, oh, it can't be that. And then there was a part of my brain that it was, you know, it's the old man from the Looney Tunes cartoon that runs to right to the camera and in the Yosemite Sam bit, where you see the pirate ship, and it's the sad sack, formerly the Jolly Roger, and he yells, "I was a man once," and like runs off camera again.
Not even close.
You know the cartoon, though, right?
Of course.
Okay.
Love that one. Bugs gets bribed with a free trip around the world, and as they're sailing off, he sees a little mouse on the deck that goes, "He's not long for this world."
I can't tell you how many times I've quoted that cartoon. Something is happening, and I just kind of blurt out, "I was a man once," and run away. Yes, my life in cartoons.
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't blurt that out the more you spend time with your kids.
I love my kids. Kids are the best part of life. So I like this one. So the bit here is that everywhere they go, there's a reason they can't stay there. First, they're bullied out of the roller rink, and then I think they go to a place where there's, like, ballroom dancing, and it ends up being Beast Castle, which is funny.
I love the gag where Mickey says, "My friend Chip says his ballroom hasn't been used in years." That was Chip, obviously, the Chip cup.
Yep,
I didn't catch that the first time. Again, very clever writing.
They bounce around a couple of different places, and finally they just, you know, after being bullied enough times, they fight, you know, and having run out of places to go, they just go back to the roller rink and fight them off. It's a funny cartoon. It's really good stuff. The next one, The Big Bad Wolf. Again, Mickey's an insane person. In this one, he's trying to reform the Big Bad Wolf, who is voiced by Clancy Brown.
Happy birthday, Mr. Brown. You know today's Clancy Brown's birthday.
Oh, what excellent timing.
Happy birthday to one of my all-time favorite voice actors. No one does Lex Luthor better than you.
So, the whole concept here is that the Big Bad Wolf is doing what the Big Bad Wolf does. He comes in and he starts blowing houses down and he's trying to eat the three little pigs. And Mickey's like, you see... Mickey plays the part of the social worker from Oz who thinks he can reform everybody. And did you ever watch Oz?
Way too young.
Okay. Well, if you have access to... Well, you have HBO Max now. If you have a chance to sit down and watch Oz, it's not McNulty, that's The Wire. McManus! All these Irish-Scottish characters. McManus, is the social worker in Oz, like, his big failing in life was that he really thought he could reform a lot of these, like, hardcore prisoners, and most of them took advantage of them, and a lot of this ended in grisly murder. Not quite the same thing here, but, you know, at some level, the same sort of premise. the big bad wolf is the big bad wolf, and he's trying to eat as many of the creatures in this fairy tale world as he possibly can. And Mickey's like, and Mickey, like McManus, is like, you just need a hug. You just need a hug, and you need someone to give you a chance. And the big bad wolf's like, sure.
Sure. Now go. Now, why don't you introduce me to all your tasty looking friends? Oh, go to introduce me to more. And I just love how his idea of eating them. It's. I mean, obviously he can't, like, you know, chew them or anything, but it's literally just like inhale, swallow, gulp.
Right. Yeah, and it's kind of a gruesome cartoon when you think about it. I mean, nobody dies. It's a fucking Mickey Mouse cartoon for kids. But when you think about, like, what's really happening here, he's eating these animals whole.
Mm-hmm.
And alive, yeah. And Mickey doesn't pay, and Mickey, utterly clueless. No clue what's going on as his entire world is being eaten around him.
Yeah, he doesn't even notice when Goofy manages to stick his head through the skin of the wolf. Basically, like, man, get out of here!
Yeah.
It's just like, how oblivious are you?
Yeah, so not only is Mickey a lunatic, but he's also oblivious.
And then, of course, this is actually my favorite part, is that after he's supposedly eaten everyone, the wolf invites Mickey over for dinner, and he comes to the house. And if you notice the background, it's obviously the house of the Practical Pig from Three Little Pigs, but they designed it to look just like the house did in the original 1930 short, complete with a framed picture of I think it's like sausages, and it says "Mother." Was in the 1930 short.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf? The big bad wolf.
The big bad wolf. The big bad wolf.
Who's afraid of the big bad wolf?
Why do you say wolf with, like, woof?
Because I'm from New York.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're not saying wolf. You're trying to communicate with my dog.
Bow, wow, wow, yippee-o, yippee-ay. That's a lot of music on this show. All right.
Especially tonight.
So, wait, remind me, what's the resolution? How does he finally get everybody out of there?
He basically just starts getting the wolf to chase him, and that every time the wolf hits a wall or something, he coughs up one of the friends.
Terrific.
More or less.
Yeah. All right. Moving on to the following week, December 11th, we have The Brave Little Squire. Okay, I'm going to quick get through the premise of this, and then I have to talk about how this ended and how it affected my poor son. So The Brave Little Squire, inspired by The Brave Little Tailor. You want to give a 30-second synopsis of The Brave Little Tailor?
Classic fairy tale told through Mickey Mouse. Mickey is a tailor who kills 7 flies with one stroke of his fly swatter. And when he triumphantly yells out his window, "I killed 7 with one blow," he happens to interrupt a group of gentlemen who are talking about killing giants. And obviously there is a giant miscommunication that gets back to the king, who thinks that this tiny little tailor can kill 7 giants with one blow. So he sends him off to kill the giant that's pillaging their kingdom and says, "If you get through this, I'll give you my Princess Minnie's hand in marriage." It's a classic short. It's one of, I'd say it's in the top, maybe not 10, maybe top 15 greatest or classic Mickey Mouse shorts that everyone needs to see.
Just as an aside, 1 year for Halloween, when we did Mickey's Not So Scary Halloween, last 2 years, you could actually dress up as an adult at this thing. I mean, I guess you can't wear masks anymore. That's the issue there. In any case, one of the few times I actually dressed up in costume for it, I dressed up as Willy the Giant.
Oh, nice!
Yeah, I pulled off a pretty good Willy too. Today with the chocolate pot roast. In any case, this version we have Mortimer the Mouse, who is voiced by Jeff Bennett, and Mortimer has been getting his squires killed in action and taking credit for what victories they do have in killing all manner of fantastical beasts, even though he hasn't done any of those things. But he is being lauded as a hero. And so he is in need of a new squire, and of course Mickey thinks he's the hero that he claims to be, and so Mickey volunteers, and of course he gets the job because, you know, he, in this iteration of the cartoon, is pig hostage. And there's a couple of versions of this where they go and fight a fantastical beast, and Mortimer kind of shoves Mickey into the action, and Mickey, despite himself, is victorious, and Mortimer takes Mortimer claims the victory, takes the credit.
It is great. Mickey run into danger head first with a wooden spoon, screaming distraction.
They do this. There's a montage of this where finally at the end of it, Mickey's like, "I've had it." Clearly, this isn't going to change, and he's not getting any better, so he quits. And right about this time, I can't remember what attacks the kingdom. Oh, it's a dragon.
Dragon.
Yeah. So a dragon finally attacks the kingdom, and Mortimer runs like hell. And so Mickey is left to deal with this dragon, and he throws water into its face, like it's the Wicked Witch. And because
he throws it into its open mouth and essentially kind of douses its pilot light, right. So to speak.
So the fact that the thing's the size of a dinosaur and still has razor sharp claws and teeth and everything else, and the destructive power of a hurricane, some what we've been told from Smaug, it can't breathe fire, so it freaks out and runs away. And so Mickey is made a knight, and Mortimer is put in the stockade, and they throw tomatoes at him. Now, go ahead, before I get into this.
Yes. Oh, well, I'm glad that they chose... Yes, thank you, Eddie. Two nights in a row you've interrupted me. See, I told you. You start saying wolf instead of wolf, and now all of a sudden the dog thinks he's been invited on the show. Anyway, I really like that they had Mortimer as the villain for this one. Mortimer was introduced in a classic, very early Mickey's cartoon called Mickey's Rival. He isn't used that often in modern cartoons. More often than not, if they're going to have an adversary for Mickey, it's going to be Pete. But I think this one works a lot better because Pete is so much more of just an adversarial bully. I don't think his character works as well for being a slimy con man. That's something more that Mortimer fits the bill for.
Mortimer also shows up where Minnie is, and he's a rival for Mickey. He's a rival for Minnie's attention, and so in a situation where they're doing. You know, where Minnie is the focus, and it's trying to get Minnie's attention, that's where you need Mortimer.
Well, there's been a handful of shorts where Pete tries to, very much in the veins of, like, Bluto, Olive Oil, and Popeye, Pete will show up, grab Minnie and say, "My girl now," and Minnie's going, "Mickey, help me, save me." But again, that's not going to work for this story arc where Queen Minnie has to be convinced that this phony knight is real. I love the line where he's talking about smiting the dragon, and she goes, "And yet your uniform is still spotless." You know, having Pete in that role isn't going to work because there is no way that Minnie would just blindly trust him. Right. Mortimer is someone we all know. He's a slimy, contemptible liar who somehow has managed to find a way to just fool everyone. And we all hate people like that, and he plays that part very well.
Yep. So I have to tell you the ending of this cartoon. I enjoyed this. It's a takeoff of the Brave Little Taylor and all that, and it was fine. It's kind of typical Mickey Mouse, more traditional Mickey Mouse fare, just sort of an update on a classic. Mm-hmm. And I start to hear whimpering. Like my son's sitting on the couch next to me. I'm kind of sitting forward because if you sit too far back in the couch, you end up like, you know, it's uncomfortable. So I'm sitting forward because I want to be able to hear the TV and, I'm into what's happening. So my son is sitting kind of behind me and, mind you, he's 6 and a half going on 7. And I start to hear him cry. Like, boo-hoo, I'm really upset, like, crying.
Like bawling cry or
yeah, like breathing heavy and the whole nine yards, and I'm like, wait, what the fuck? How did this happen? I stopped what we were watching for a minute, and even my daughter who turned 10 today, happy birthday, Lily, kind of looks over. It's like, what's going on? Like, how'd we lose Jonas all of a sudden? So I'm like, buddy, what's happening? Why are you crying? And he was like, he didn't deserve to die. Brick?
What?
I'm like, who didn't deserve? It was like, the guy. I know he lied, and he's not the hero Mickey is, but he didn't deserve to die. You don't deserve to die for lying.
And I'm like, he thought they killed Mortimer by putting him in the stockade?
Yeah, apparently he thought they executed Mortimer.
No, stockade is not used for execution. Stockade is used for prolonged public humiliation.
Yeah, it's not a guillotine, and I explained that to him. Because I think that's what he thought it was.
Yeah, no, actually, people... Essentially, if you were in the stockade for a long enough time, people would start bringing you food and water and stuff, because the idea of being in the stockade was you needed to survive the whole time to be humiliated.
Right.
If you died in the stockade, it just voided the punishment.
So he's crying hysterically because they thought he goes, you know, for the simple crime of lying about his deeds, this village of murderers fucking killed the guy. And he, you know, and my son, the defense attorney, was like, "What?" bit harsh, I think. So I'm trying to calm him down, and I'm like, first of all, let's take this one by one. He's not dead. That's a stockade." And I'm trying to explain to him what a stockade is. And they're like, "And then I think he thought the tomatoes were blood." So I'm like, they threw tomatoes at him to humiliate him. That's his punishment for being a liar and a cheat. And Jonas goes, well, he didn't deserve that either. They couldn't just send him away? I'm like, oh my God, Jonas.
Your son's got a bleeding heart and it's adorable. And I mean that in a good way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Between him and the raging feminist daughter I have, I've got a long road ahead of me. Two, at the very least, libertarian parents and two raging liberal children. It's going to be
exactly.
Fantastic. All right. Hey, nobody cares about our politics, so let's move on. But I had to share that story about my son. Like, I can't believe he reacted that way.
Make sure he knows that if you were in the stockade, you survived. Because, like I said, if you died in the stockade, they're like, oh, shit, then what are we going to do for fun now?
Yeah. The next one is an ordinary date. Mickey and Minnie try to make their date an original and excitable one. Like, this was fine. The idea here is Mickey is trying to take Minnie on the perfect date. Minnie is trying to take Mickey on the perfect date. They keep trying to outdo one another, but everything they try backfires and explodes, and so they try to top it. And to the point, you know, I think they tried this on an episode of Friends. That's what this felt like. Because on the one hand, you've got the boys pulling shenanigans and the girls pulling shenanigans on the other side. And finally, everyone just quits and says, I've had it with all of you, and I'm walking away from this entire stupid situation. And Minnie and Mickey just have a simple date. It was a repetitive gag, and the gags just got bigger and bigger until it finally got so big they had to resolve the cartoon. It was fine. I laughed. Not their best one.
Yeah, the idea is the slapstick that Donald, Goofy, Daisy, and Clarabelle Cow go through. For the record, always fun to see Clarabelle Cow get some screen time. She is a horribly miss... they really don't use her enough. She's a very fun character.
In Minnie's... what was the show on Disney Junior? Minnie had her own spinoff from the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It was Minnie... Shit, I can't remember what the hell she was selling, but I was like, maybe it was like jewelry or clothing or something like that. Minnie's Boutique, that was the name of the show, and Clarabelle Cow, I think, worked there or worked with Minnie in some. I know it was Minnie and Daisy who ran the shop, and then Clarabelle Cow made frequent appearances on the show.
Okay. But yeah, again, the humor in this is just from the over-the-top slapstick. I mean, you get an end where Mickey and Minnie both simultaneously tell their friends, okay, we're going to go with the nuclear option. Everything at once. And it is just craziness to the point where Donald accidentally drops a box of fireworks into the fire pit oven at the restaurant. So everything just starts blowing up.
That's really funny, actually.
And I like the, there's a couple little bits I really like. There's a scene where they're driving down the road, and Mickey and Minnie are both trying to be subtle and giving signals to their friends. And Mickey says something. It's like, I know you like, it's like, check out all these, those animals over there, Minnie. I know you like seeing all the wildlife. And obviously he's screaming that part out. And then Minnie does pretty much the exact same thing. And I just like how they're trying to be subtle around each other, but they're both so oblivious they don't get what the other person's doing.
Yeah. Not my favorite. It, you know, like, it's not bad. It's just, it was like, meh.
Mm-hmm. I think I enjoyed this one more than the first day of school one with Gubbles.
Okay.
But I think it's because I just like watching, you know, Daisy and Goofy and Donald and all of them just have to suffer because Mickey and Minnie are too oblivious.
Okay, and the last two here, we have Supermarket Scramble. Minnie, I think this was one of, this might have been the only one where I was either on my phone or walking in and out of the room. But the premise here is that Mickey and friends are going to have a barbecue, and they're in the grocery store, and hijinks ensue.
This actually, first of all, I have a question. Who buys lobsters for a barbecue?
This depends on kind of a fancy barbecue you're having.
Yeah, I get that, but they're having hot dogs.
Okay, well, hot dogs and lobsters is gross. But a normal person, you know, surf and turf, you know what I mean?
Well, sure, but yeah, I guess I just kind of, when he said, it's like, okay, Minnie, you get the meat, Donald, you get the fruit, I'll get the fixins, Goofy, get the lobsters. I'm like, lobsters?
Well, clearly they just wanted to set up Goofy in a lobster tank.
This does have my absolute favorite gag, though. Daisy decides to wait out front with the car and keep it running. And it's, first of all, that's not what you do when you keep the car running. When you keep the car running, you don't just leave it in front of the car. You don't just stay in your car in front. You keep driving around the parking lot until the people you're waiting for come out front, and then you pull back up to the front. That's the way that works. But it's great because she's sitting in there in her convertible, and a policeman comes and tells her she needs to move, and she rolls up the window. The top is still pulled back in the convertible. She goes, sorry, window's up. I can't hear you. That just killed me the way she said that.
The last bit, I think they've got, they finally got everything from the super. I can't even remember what was taking so long in the supermarket and why they couldn't get their shit together. But eventually, go ahead.
Minnie got caught up in a massive panic over a hot dog sale. Donald suddenly developed the ability to shoot static charges from trying to open those damn plastic baggies for the fruit. And Mickey somehow got promoted to store manager because Mickey is too much of a people pleaser and cannot stop helping those in need.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Okay.
I love it. Because he actually does says, I can't help it. I'm a people pleaser.
So they finally have their picnic. They finally get all the shit out of the grocery store. They get in the car. They take off. They go to have their picnic. And they forget Goofy, who's in the lobster tank.
That did seem like a bit of a weird joke. Especially because I hate to say, part of me, when they left, I was like, I wasn't even so wrapped up in the action to go, wait, where's Goofy?
Right.
So when they left, I was literally saying, okay, so the gag's going to be they forgot Goofy.
Yeah. All right. So you mentioned a few times now that they weaved some sort of juvenile horror elements into this 10-episode, 8-minute-per-shorts series. And I don't know why. I don't know why Mickey's a psycho. I don't know why we need to have horror elements in this. I don't know what audience we're going for here, but both me and my kids freaked out about this. And it's kind of a funny premise. Certainly being a married man, you know, and you know, my wife and I having those moments of, would the phone stop ringing? Would people just leave us the hell alone? You know, just needing, needing a day to yourself to convalesce certainly rang true in my house. But the premise of this one is that Donald and Daisy have been going out with Mickey and Minnie on double dates for what seems like forever, and they just want a day to themselves. They just kind of want to hang back in the house and watch TV and be together and not deal with anybody, like any normal couple. And Minnie and Mickey, and so they cancel on Minnie and Mickey, but the way they do it is they say that they're sick. At which point, Minnie and Mickey psychotically try to come to the house to take care of them.
And all of a sudden, this whole thing turns into a horror movie.
Yeah, it's essentially a zombie setup where, you know, the Night of the Living Dead or something like that, where Donald and Daisy are in the house and they're trying to keep Zombie Mickey and Zombie Minnie out of the house.
I was going with serial killers, personally.
Which one are you going with?
Serial killers.
Okay. I was thinking, I can't remember which zombie movie this was, but it's a handful of survivors in a mall, and they're trying to barricade the mall to keep the zombies out, and it ends with them on the roof.
Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. So this is Dawn of the Dead Mickey Mouse remake, because why not remake everything with either Muppets or Mickey Mouse? And if you're saying, what Muppets, why is he bringing that up? Because recently somebody put out an article saying the Great Gatsby has entered into public domain and it should be remade with Muppets.
And there is now a very large fan base for that.
Weird, man. Like, maybe it's a comic book, but I don't know if I can handle live-action Muppets doing The Great Gatsby. We know what happened in The Great Gatsby, right?
The recent Great Gatsby with Leonardo DiCaprio is actually one of mine and Andre's favorite movies.
Okay, now picture it with Muppets.
I really don't want to see Kermit get shot in the back of his swimming pool.
Yeah, and there's a lot of sex and nonsense that goes on in The Great Gatsby. Anyway, moving on. So this finally ends with Donald and Daisy end up in the hospital, and they think they're alone now. There doesn't seem to be anyone around. But lo and behold, the camera pans back, and there's Mickey and Minnie in the hospital with them.
Because they got sick chasing them in the rain.
Yeah. My suggestion to the people, the good people working on this show, maybe not so much horror next time. Maybe make it light and funny and, you know, I don't know, not have wolves eating people whole and zombies and psychotic Mickey Mouse.
Yeah, there's a bit where Minnie's walking up the stairs after Daisy and her shadow hits the wall, but the shadows of her fingers keep moving further down the wall, and I just remember looking and going, God damn, that's like a Hellraiser thing. Jesus.
Yeah, that's utterly unnecessary.
Song saying, Daisy, Daisy, I heard you had the flu. Oh my God. There's a few scenes of this that actually get your toes curled. I kept looking back at Andre, and we were just like, in what universe is making this creepy?
Yeah, like, why is this, you know, as I can't remember which cartoon I got this from, but as the cartoon once asked of its audience, is this strip really necessary?
That is several Looney Tunes and Tex Avery shorts.
Yes, definitely Tex Avery. Years ago when I was a kid, one of my dad's friends, and therefore, I was friends with their children, the father was bragging about how he had gotten the entire collection of Tex Avery shorts on Laserdisc when Laserdisc was a thing.
Oh, wow.
Yep. But yeah, Tex Avery's hilarious. In any case, so my final thoughts, and I'll give you the last word here. I enjoyed these. Like I said, I think I had more patience for these than I did the Looney Tunes ones. Looney Tunes actually recently released a series of Christmas ones, and I put it on for my kid, and I just went in the kitchen and cooked dinner. I didn't even watch it. When Looney Tunes comes out, they're calling it Season 1C. Season 1A we reviewed. Season 1B was the Christmas series, which I didn't bother with. And then the second half of season one C comes out January 21st, and we'll review it the following week. But I think, as I said before, I laughed harder at the Mickey Mouse stuff when it wasn't freaking me freaking me out or causing my son to have some sort of conniption. So I got past the. I don't love the animation. This isn't really the style of animation I enjoy, but I accepted it for what it was, and I enjoyed the humor when it was there, and I'm looking forward to see what they do with this in the next iteration of this series. And what did you think overall?
I really enjoyed it. I felt that it did a good job keeping the same creativity that we saw with the previous Mickey Mouse shorts that were airing on Disney Channel and YouTube. The voice acting is all great. Caitlin Robrock is a very good choice for Minnie. It was really sad for fans of classic Disney when we lost Russie Taylor last year. She had been the voice of Minnie for ages. You do know she was married to Wayne Allwine, right?
Who?
The voice of Mickey Mouse.
Who?
The previous voice of Mickey Mouse and the previous voice of Minnie Mouse were married to each other.
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah, and he sadly died a while back, and she died last year. I think Caitlin Robrock did a really good job with the character, so she's a very good choice for the role now. Mickey's a little more insane in this, but I still enjoyed it. It still made me laugh, and I will probably watch these few episodes again until we get more animation. So I highly recommend it, especially to anyone who's a fan of classic Disney.
Common Sense Media rated the show 3 out of 5 stars, stating the characters are put in different outlandish scenarios from one episode to the next and play versions of themselves that maintain their relationship and personalities. Familiar foes arrive on the scene to cause trouble, but injuries are quickly remedied, and accidents rarely amount to any realistic harm. Well, yeah, it's a fucking cartoon. So I want to ask you, I want to take the opportunity as we conclude our look at The Wonderful World of Mickey Mouse Season 1-ish. You have been watching the contemporary 2017 DuckTales. Give me the 50 words or less on this.
They got David Tennant to play Scrooge McDuck. What else do you need? Go watch.
Danny Pudi's in this too. And Ben Schwartz.
Yeah, and Lin-Manuel Miranda as Gizmo Duck.
So I was just reading that DuckTales is in its third season. I guess the first half of it is out now, and this third season is going to be the last of it. But they will release the final episodes of season 3 sometime this year. And so I say unto thee, you have any interest in reviewing the series when it concludes?
Yes, but we have to hold off on the review until after all the episodes are on Disney Plus.
Okay.
Because that's the only way I can watch them.
They're not all currently on Disney Plus?
Nope, season 3's not yet.
Really? Huh. I assume they all were. I thought everything got moved to Disney Plus. How bizarre. How bizarre. Da, 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 da. How bizarre. You know that one?
Seriously, what is up with all the music between the two of us tonight?
The first and second season have been released on Disney Plus since its launch, but users have noted episodes being out of order. The series had its episodes arranged in the proper order on June 26, 2020. Okay, so we're waiting for the whole thing to show up on for season 3 to show up. That's what we're waiting for?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's fine.
I'm sorry, I don't actually have TV or cable. I have a computer.
Well, absolutely. As I said, I thought the whole thing was going straight to Disney Plus. If it has to do, I guess, Disney XD first, have its run there, and then be ported over. Yeah, I'm with you. I'll just wait until the whole thing shows up on Disney Plus, and we'll go from there.
Yes, but when it does, I will happily talk about it. I have, within this last year of the shutdown, I think I've binge watched the first 2 seasons at least 3 times.
It's that good, huh?
I keep rewatching the 3 Caballeros episode.
Okay. All right. I mean, I enjoyed...
back to another one of our reviews. Plug, yeah. Plug.
I mean, I enjoyed the 1987 iteration of DuckTales. I watched a large part of that. I wasn't into, like, Goof Troop and all the, and the stuff that would come out after DuckTales, but DuckTales proper and the movie that prompted the DuckTales television show, I was into as a kid. You know, in 87, I was 11 years old, so this was, you know, I was in right in there with the age bracket that this would have been made for. You know, and I don't know how much of my I don't know how much of DuckTales my kids have watched, so it'll be something fun I can watch with them.
Well, Goof Troop was definitely a little bit more. Goof Troop has not aged nearly as well. The original DuckTales had much more of a timeless feel to it. And here's a fun little thing: we were just talking about Russi Taylor, the previous voice of Minnie. She was also the voice of Huey, Dewey, and Louie in the '87 series.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so that takes us to the end of our show here. Alexis Haina and I reviewed Red Sonja and Vampirella Meet Betty and Veronica yesterday, and then the day after tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this, we will be reviewing the second season of His Dark Material, which was mostly based on the book The Subtle Knife. And that's going to be it for you for a little bit until... the 19th, when you and 97 other people will be reviewing The Mandalorian Season 2.
I almost feel like saying, like, did I volunteer for that too late, or should I back out and just let the rest of you guys have fun with that one?
No, it's the same crew as it was for Lucifer, so assuming we don't have Skype issues, it's fine. If not, I'm once again letting Andrew take control, and I'm just going to sit back and listen to you all talk about The Mandalorian, which has been spoiled for me. Just, you know, this is one of the downsides to me watching things in the order I'm going to podcast on them and not watching them when they are just released like everybody else does. Like, so far, more or less, the stuff from Cobra Kai hasn't been completely ruined. But yeah, the cameo at the end of The Mandalorian Season 2 completely ruined for me because it was everywhere. Like, in our chats, you guys did a pretty good job of not telling me what happened. But every nerd comic book outlet spoiled it across the board. I'm like, well, whatever.
I feel bad because I follow Mark Hamill on Instagram, and the day that was released, he posted a picture of himself with his finger over his mouth going, shush, and that was it. No tags, nothing.
Right. Yeah, there was no escaping it, and it's just, you know, it is what it is. And then finally, you will be on for three back-to-back shows, as a matter of fact. We're finishing up our run on the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina comic book, issues 6, 7, and 8. We've already done the first five issues last year when Season 3 came out. And then we'll be discussing Season 4 on January 26th, and then Looney Tunes 1C, as I said before, on January 28th. So you asked for it, you got it, Alexis. A whole lot of podcasting in the month of January.
I asked for this?
Yes, you asked for this. Go ahead and plug your shop.
All right. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic. I mentioned this last night, but I'll go ahead and say it again. I want to thank everyone who was a part of our charity drive for every order that was placed throughout the month of December. We donated $5 to St. Jude's, and we ended up with over $250 in donations. So again, thank you so much to everyone who participated in that. You guys are the best. We're getting ready to put a bunch of new stuff on the site. We're also trying to get caught up with our marketing paperwork because it is January and it's supposed to be the slow month. Keyword supposed to be. At this moment, we do not know when we are going to be on the road again for Comic Cons. We are waiting to see. Looks like a lot of the big name conventions are just kind of holding a pattern around the news. We're waiting to see how things go with the vaccines and whatnot. I will, as soon as they announce something, I will be putting out announcements on Facebook, Instagram, and Under Duress Twitter about which shows we will be attending and when we'll be back on the road. Until then, you can always find our stuff on Etsy and handmade at Amazon. Honeysuckle Rose Creations, the intersection of geek and chic.
All righty. So thank you for checking out our show tonight. Appreciate you all for listening. For Alexis Haina, I'm Mark Rattledge. Be well, be safe, and behave.